Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. This is Dave Sider. Once again, this is Show Me the Way, Growth Through Acquisition, with my guest today, Todd Riley. We're going to talk in this episode about his game-changing jump from an employee to the business owner that he is today. In fact, he's a business owner of several businesses. Welcome to Show Me the Way. Again, I am Dave Sider, and my podcast is presented by Spencer Fain, LLP, a Kansas City law firm with over 18 locations throughout the country. Todd is the president of Creative Blow Molding, a company that's located in Lee's Summit, Missouri. And Todd, welcome to the show. I appreciate your time.
Thank you, Dave. I appreciate you having me.
You're welcome. Tell us, Todd, a little bit about you. Give us some background. Where did you grow up? Where are you from? How did you get to this place that you're at now? A quick review of what Todd is all about.
Well, I appreciate it, Dave. So yeah, I grew up in rural Kansas, down in the southeast corner, down around Pittsburgh. I went to college down there at Pitt State. And really, kind of the plastics program was kind of what got me into what I do today. So ironically enough, I graduated school and found a job in the giant metropolis of Kansas City and worked for a tooling company as a design engineer. Oh. And have technically done that most of my career in different phases. Had the opportunity of spending 25 years with my first employer, which I learned a tremendous amount. Worked my way from a design engineer to run roughly 19 years after that. Of those 24, I was transitioned to CEO of their US and UK operation. Ran that for about 6 years. Had the opportunity to go on with a private equity group, as you know, and worked with them for about 4 years, transitioned that company, which was Big Three, and it was sold to a publicly traded company. So again, I got the opportunity to work with private individual owned, private equity, as well as publicly traded. And the opportunity came up to take my daughter's college fund and invest that into some businesses. That's what we've done.
and how does your daughter feel about that, needless to say?
I haven't showed her the bank statement, so she doesn't know yet. So
we can only hope, ladies and gentlemen. One of the big reasons I want to have you on is you've done something that a lot of people dream about, that is making the jump from being an employee to a business owner. But before we do that, give us some specifics about Creative Blow Molding. What is the business? How did you find out about it? What does it do? What do you do every day?
So Creative Blow Mold is kind of unique. So we manufacture tooling for the plastics and packaging industry for rigid packaging. So when everybody goes to the store and they pick up their shampoo or their Tide bottle or their mustard, they take it home, they use their product, they're excited that it doesn't leak. They're excited that it stands up, it has one hole, and it does what it's supposed to do. And they're more worried about the product inside.
Right.
We're the company that makes sure that vessel, that plastic bottle, delivers and performs. And accidentally, when you drop it on the floor, it doesn't break. And so that's really the side of the business that we do. So we work in a lot of consumer development, home and personal care, bath and beauty. So a lot of different industries, food, obviously food and beverage. And then one of the other things that we're doing with our business is we're doing more and more work in the Department of Energy and Department of Defense. So diversification. So, which is kind of one of the add-ons that we've recently had as well. So things are going really well in that arena.
So when I met you, you were an employee. There are a lot of people, and I don't say that to be disparaging, but there is a big, big jump from what I've seen in studying my clients and, you know, friends. There's a big jump in going from an employee to becoming a business owner. Let's talk a little bit about that, because that, frankly, doesn't work for everybody.
Right.
So when you contacted me and we worked together, we talked a little bit about it, but share with the audience the thought process you went through in making that jump and saying, it's something out there that's more than what I'm doing. I need to go be my own boss. How did that all come about?
So I've always wanted that. And so I've always taken the approach for any employer that took a chance on me. I've always acted as though, or took the responsibility of, it was partially my company as well. So it was an approach. And I think that's what afforded me to be able to climb the ranks through the years and to take on the CEO or the president's roles for other people. I took that responsibility. I felt like it was my family, my people, my teams that I had built and helped develop over a period of time. And I knew that at some point in time, didn't know when, but at some point in time, I wanted that for myself. So that was really the transition. It was a neat opportunity. But again, the key is it's that personal ownership that you put into it. And again, it's about the people.
So I wrote about this in my book that I had published a couple of years ago, Quiet Plans, Exciting Results, of what I thought was the criteria or maybe the values, the principles that I saw in individuals that became successful business owners like yourself. What I always thought would be true about you was that you always seemed to have that unparalleled drive, Todd. You had the passion and the drive and the vision to go do something that was extraordinary. My sense is that you have nuclear-powered energy. You just seem to be able to run and run and run. Is there one overriding, shall we say, principle, value, strength that you have that people would recognize in you and is the driving force, maybe the number one driving force in you being able to become an owner? Or can you say that?
Yeah. I think the biggest hurdle, and you know, it's going to sound a little cliche, that if you want to go do it, you need to go do it. You think about it. You think about it in the off hours. You think about it when, you know, that 30-minute window when you either read a book or watch a movie on TV before you go to bed. You think about it during that period of time. You truly envision, hey, what could this be? So when the opportunity gets there, you already have the playbook mentally put in your mind. If that makes sense.
Yes.
And then the other part of it too is I'll never, without a doubt, I'm never going to be the smartest guy in the room. And I know that, but I'm willing to work as hard, if not harder than anybody else. So there's a certain level of grit that for somebody that is, you know, not necessarily a 4.0 Rhodes Scholar, but they're willing to do the work. They're willing to connect with the right people and they're willing to take the risks or the challenge, that grit, which I think is a very common thing, or not common, depending upon who you are. But I think it's very relatable that if whatever it takes to get the job done, you're willing to do that.
Interesting. Yeah, I had the same thought that I think it was Calvin Coolidge, one of his quotes is, it's something more than just mere intelligence. The colleges are filled with people of raw intelligence. They were called professors or something like that. It's something well beyond just knowledge per se.
Yeah, yeah.
Let's talk about when you left Big Three. And was your first acquisition Creative Blow Mold, or was there something
Yes.
in between? Okay. So how did you find this business? How did that come out?
So I was gracious enough to meet a gentleman by the name of Alan Scheidt. And Alan was the old business owner of Big Three. And he had sold that to private equity in 2012. So as I was transitioning on in 2016, 2017 into Big Three, understanding the culture, where they wanted to go with the business, understanding the private equity side of the world and all the things and advice you'd given me to look for when I was working with private equity, at the end of the day, we hit it off. We had a great relationship. So fast forward to 2018, 2019, we had sold Big Three to the publicly traded organization. Alan had kind of gone on his way. And then in 2019 in September, it was sold to a publicly traded organization, a great group, the Eastern Company. And again, we had a lot of similar things. And fast forward to then March of 2020, new goals, new year, exciting. I promised I would sign a deal with them for 5 years, and we did that. And then ironically enough, COVID hits. And I find myself trying to run 7 different locations, 1 in Canada, 1 in Wales, and 5 in the US for my dining room table.
Wow.
And, you know, a lot of people think that COVID and those experiences were the absolute worst thing in the world. Well, it was pretty good to me.
Right.
So I can't really complain about that. So oddly enough, about May of that year, after we're 60 days into COVID, we're working around all the economics, manufacturing, the areas that are up and down. Alan calls me and says, hey, what are you doing? And I said, I'm trying to run 7 locations from my dining room table. I'm a very hands-on guy. I used to travel 45 weeks out of the year, be in all the plants on a consistent basis. And I was struggling from my dining room table. Mm-hmm. And I didn't know how long it was going to be. If you remember in the early days, mm-hmm. COVID was only going to be about a month and it was going to be over.
Right.
Little did we know. And so he's like, well, I'm about honeydewed out. I've done about all the things I wanted to do in retirement. and I want to get back in. And we talked about partnering together, kind of that playbook, that conversation. You think about it, you talk about it, that I was referring to. And he said, let's go find something. And that's how it really established. That was the tipping point for me of, I think I'm at a point where I've got a very like-minded person, a great partner. He understands business. We think the same way. And the most significant thing to our partnership, which is kind of spilling over here a little bit, Dave, so I apologize.
Please.
But the most important part was there's really no ego involved with us. Mm. And if one has a better idea than the other, we're able to say, if it's in the best interest of the business, well, then that's what we'll go do. And so, and the other part is, as you know, when you're in those types of positions, whether it's a CEO, a president, or whatever it might be, it's a fairly lonely position. So you don't have a lot of people that you can share thoughts and ideas with. And I had that with him because he had been in the same role prior in life as well. So it's like, this is the perfect partnership. We just need to go find a business that accommodates what we know, which was rigid packaging or blow mold tooling. And so we happened to know a few guys. I reached out to the gentleman that owned Creative Blow Mold Prior, which is Michael Boning, great guy, still on today as a part-time CFO for us as well, by the way. But again, that's the path we took. That was really the first step for us.
So it sounds like maybe a lesson here for folks is you found first the perfect partner. I take it that because of his experience, I take it his money and the fact that he could bring those dynamics to the table, and you are the operator, you bring those dynamics to the table, that was the driving force more than a business or some other type of vision that you might have for how to go forward in locating specifically a particular type of acquisition.
Yeah, it was probably more of the like-minded, the partnership, and we played to each other's strengths and weaknesses, no doubt. We used a lot of both of ours money, to be honest. But again, we have a good banking partner as well, which is very nice. And we're both, like I say, we're of like-minded, so we both kind of are anxious to get the ball rolling. And we say to ourselves sometimes, we're not smart enough to know we can't do it, so we go do it.
Excellent. So walk me through how you approached Michael and the business. What, for people that maybe who have never bought a business, I mean, how do you even take step one? What does that look like?
It's kind of interesting. And I had a little bit of exposure while I was at Big Three with acquisitions, obviously in behalf of Big Three. And there's a different approach. Obviously, you never want to kick the door down and say, hey, I'm here to buy you. But the thing that I did was I just simply asked Michael, you know, what are your plans? What are you trying to do with your business? I knew the business. I knew who he was. I knew his age and the circumstances and so on and so forth. And just asking kind of, what is your long-term plan? And it was kind of funny because he asked me, he goes, well, are you looking for a job? Are you wanting to work here? I said, well, kind of, but not probably in the way you're thinking. Mm. And so it was just a very open conversation. And it was to the point. It was more about partnering and understanding the culture of that business. And then having 30 years of packaging experience and my partner having 30 years of packaging experience, how can we help take your business to the next level? Mm. And that's really the approach that we took.
And so the first step then is you start talking to them about what it would take to buy the business. What does that look like? Do you put together a letter? Do you put together some kind of an outline?
Yes.
I've heard from people over the years, you kind of, some of them sit down at a table on the back of a napkin. How did you do it?
It was kind of a blend of both. I think the initial conversations were without a doubt verbal and, you know, kind of that cocktail napkin approach, if you will. And once that we knew that we were within a range, we weren't 100 miles apart, we then formalized it with an initial offering, kind of a layout, and then went to an LOI and then transitioned through the LOI into the closing and so on and so forth. So it was very informal in the beginning because, again, you're talking about businesses that are not Fortune 500. You know, we're all normal run-of-the-mill people that are trying to run small businesses and house 30, 40, 50, or 100 employees. So we're not used to the big corporate room environment. You know, you play multiple roles when you're in these positions. So it was a very straightforward, honest, open approach that, you know, what are you looking for and what are we looking for? And then how can we finally get to meet in the middle?
How long did it take from beginning to end?
Let's see. We started in, it would have been June. And then we actually closed October 1st. So it would have been June of 2020 to October 1st of 2020.
Very good. That's pretty expedited. Good for you, at least in my experience. What was for you the toughest part of the transition? I talk about the fact that in every deal, there is something called deal fatigue often.
Sure.
Where you kind of are at an impasse, or it just seems to be wearing, you know, wearing it down and wearing you down, and you have to be prepared for that. Did you have that kind of an experience?
I think what you're describing is pretty common, and there were times that we were going through that. Now, again, I was privileged in prior in life to experience some of that, so we knew that we needed to keep the ball rolling, or otherwise, you know, there's other opportunities popping up as well, and people lose interest or you know, a small hang-up. So what we did in a lot of those instances is we would call direct along with, in this instance, it was his attorney, and just kind of talk through it and say, you know, Michael, we understand what you're trying to do, or at least we think we do, but let's walk through that. Let's kind of talk through what does that mean, or what does that look like, or how do we apply it to this particular instance? So again, it was very open, honest, and forthright. And sometimes that, you know, there's too much information that comes out in those types of situations, or it can, but we kind of work through that. You know what I mean? But if you're really interested in it and you wanted to do it, of course, I was eager and excited. So I kept pushing. I would call and find out where things stood, or if it was hung up with an attorney somewhere, I would call, do we have an estimated time frame of when that'll be done? Because I'd love to get back together and talk through it. We're super excited about this. We want to be your partner, that kind of thing.
It sounds like you and your partner have kind of a self-contained unit, or supporters or counselors, professionals that help you. Who assisted you in these transactions? And the reason I ask that is I think oftentimes people think they have to go this road alone, and it takes some outside help in order to get people over the hurdle. Now, you've had some experience now, so maybe you've got a system down, but taking you back to the first deal that you've ever done, who have you called upon for help to get you through the process?
My very first experience that I'd gone through it with, I was supported by a private equity team who, at the end of the day, I got to learn a lot from that. I'll just be honest with you. Mm-hmm. And when I mean learn a lot, I learned a lot from what I would think would be the things to do and maybe a few things that I wouldn't do in the future. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean?
Yes.
So life's lessons comes on both sides of that, if you will. But that was where my first initial support was. But at the same time, if you didn't have that opportunity, there's guys like yourself or attorneys in the marketplace or people that have business experience that you want to reach out to and say, hey, this is kind of what I'm thinking, or this is what I would like to do, or do you know somebody? And if you remember, even in my early conversation, I asked you,
right,
do you know of anybody that's in that transitional age or might have an interest in that? This is before I actually run across Creative Blomo. Because here's the thing, the network and the relationships and people that you can reach out to, way more valuable than anything you can get on YouTube
or Google. So this happened to me recently. In fact, I'm going through it right now with some folks. They know there's a business for sale, but they don't have an idea of what they ought to offer for it. How did you go about with Creative Blomo specifically? How did you go about figuring out what you thought the business was worth and therefore put together an offer?
So we actually work with an accounting group, and we come in and did an audit of the organization. And again, we knew that we wanted to pay a fair market value for the business. It had very good structure. We knew what we wanted to do with it. And we knew what we were going to bring to the table. And that's something that we'll cover in a little bit. You know, you can't just necessarily want to buy it and not really bring anything to the table. How do you be a value add to the organization that you're looking to acquire? But ultimately, we used an accounting firm that come in, helped us audit the books, established what all your EBIT is versus your cash flows and so on and so forth. What are the asset valuations and everything like that? And then we kind of established a range and said, okay, this is where it would be a really great deal if it was at this price, and this is an overpriced area in this particular market. And being a guy like you, you know, if it was a medical company right now, well, your opportunities for purchases, so the multipliers and the way you build up those prices and what it's worth, they vary significantly. So you do need industry support related to the market that you're looking to get into.
Let's talk about that a little bit more. What did you bring to the table? You were mentioning that. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Sure. So one of the things that we talked about when we were going to get into the acquisition mode, Alan and I, we wanted to be able to not get into a business that was something outside of what we had industry knowledge or relationships with. So we knew that obviously having 30 years of rigid packaging, we knew that bull mold tooling was a marketplace that we could get into because we've got experience in that arena. So we had relationships, we had potential customers that they weren't doing business with today. Once we were doing our due diligence, we could see, okay, here's 25 of your top customers, but we knew another 15 that we thought we could bring to the table. We knew as far as personnel, manpower. I mean, today that we're the most important thing in manufacturing business, not maybe all businesses, but definitely manufacturing, is your workforce. And so we knew we had relationships in the Kansas City metropolitan area where we could bring people as we continued to grow and needed to fill positions. We could bring talented staff on board. So we knew that we had a mental platform of how we could take this business from what it is today and to where it's going.
Interesting. Were there any times during the acquisition when you were somewhat thinking to yourself, this might not work out? Is that, you know, is it all, what do they say, rainbows and unicorns? Or are there, you know, are there other things that come up to go like, is this really right for me? Is it right now?
Yeah, I think, well, you always start into question it as it gets to those flat lines or the stalling points or the stalemates, if you will. You wonder, are we going to be able to get over this hurdle? Or as enough time goes by, and let's say, for example, another opportunity in the background pops up, do you sit there and go, well, wait a minute, I'm in the middle of this deal and I'm trying to put it together and it has actually stalled a little bit, but I've got another opportunity hypothetically down the street. How do I consider both of these? What do I do there? You know what I mean?
Yes.
So yeah, there's a lot of things that you stop and question and wonder, but you go back to your original thought of what is it you're trying to accomplish? What are you wanting to be? What is our current plan? And then what is that long-term plan and what do we want it to be? And then you just continue to push forward.
Very, very helpful here. If you had two or three, well, before I ask that question, I guess you would say by definition that the M&A that you went through was a success because you're still running it and you seem happy with what you're doing. What do you see as the outgrowth of this acquisition? Some people will say, hey, I want to go out and buy more, or no, I'm going to put myself in a position to really understand this business before I go to the next step. And without getting into confidential information, I don't want you to have to, you know, feel compromised on that, but what's the next step?
No, I can tell you that one of the things, and again, and this is kind of be a strange answer, so I apologize, but you know what you know at 20, you know what you know at 30, you know what you know at 40. And as you continue to get older, I think focus on a lot of things becomes a little bit clearer. So one of the things that I realized in being in the workforce for 30 years and working for other people and now for myself, the most rewarding thing in the world is growing a business, even if it's 1% or 2%, putting more workforce in place, buying new technology and taking the business to the next level. So that plays, okay, if we're going to do this and I can somewhat write the rules, well, then I want the rules to be, I want to continue to grow and acquire and move the business forward as long as it's good for the businesses. I don't want to get so large that it's out of control. So it's controlled growth, if you will, because that's the excitement for me is going out and winning a new customer and proving to them that what we can do is exactly what they need. And they're absolutely tickled with it. And then they go on and that goes from one customer to potentially five new customers to a year later, it's 10 or 12 or whatever that might be. And it might be acquisitions. There might be geographic restrictions that we do today. You know, when you think about blow molds, they're very heavy.
Right.
So maybe an East Coast or a West Coast play makes sense for us to be able to take the nucleus or what we're doing here. We probably won't greenfield site. So it would probably be the form of an acquisition. And there's some good partners that are out there that we've had discussions with that maybe not this year, but maybe in 2023 or 2024, a partnership at a much more detailed level makes sense.
What is the end game for you? Or do you see an end game as of yet? You know, some folks that I talk to will say, I'm having too much fun. And I think for the listeners, one of the reasons I wanted you to come on here is while you've been doing this for a while, I consider you to be at the beginning of this particular business cycle, so to speak.
Yeah.
You're not at the place where you're looking to get out or quit. So you're still growing, you're still evolving.
Correct.
Is there an end game yet? I mean, do you see an exit or are you still at the place where, man, I'm having too much fun? I don't see that anytime in the near future.
Well, I can tell you right now, we're having a ton of fun, but I think anybody that tells you that they have absolutely no end game is somewhat ill-prepared, if you will, because I think it's definitely something that you have to consider. Even if it's 20 or 30 years down the road, I still think that's something that you have to be in your thoughts. So yeah, we've got a couple different opportunities. One of the things that we're trying to do heavily is our workforce, you know, we're a couple of older guys. So we're trying to get, now we're trying to invest heavily in making sure our workforce, like for example, 40% of our workforce right now is 40 years old or less.
Mm, wow.
And yeah. And so, you know, Alan and I both have been fortunate. We've had people help us along the way in our careers. And we want to be able to do that for people. We want people to be able to earn to that their effort and their drive to take this business to the next level. Because at some point in time, I can promise you this, Dave, you can write this on paper and hang it on your wall. I'm not going to be the owner that at 83 years old, everybody wishes I would have got out. So we recognize that. And we know that we want to be active and play a role. But is it a business that we keep a percentage of for a long-term period of time and make sure that there's legacy opportunities for good people? Absolutely. I think that's really what it is. I can tell you that our goal is to not take it to the marketplace and put a for sale sign out in front of it. I think it's to empower younger people to get them to the next level and for them to see some of the rewards of being able to run and own businesses like we've been afforded along the way.
Interesting. And the reason I say that interesting, I'm gathering more thoughts here as you're talking to me. Before I kind of put all of that together, let me ask you, is there or are there two or three pieces of advice you would give to someone as they're considering either buying or selling a business? What are the key points that you would ask them to remember from our time together today?
I think having a clear plan of what you're trying to accomplish. Okay, if you're a seller, what is it you're trying to do? You know, because the day after it's sold, what's the rest of your life look like? Because so many people are established by their career or their company or their job. And so you need to be honest with yourself. The flip side of that is on the buyer side, what is it you're trying to accomplish? Are you wanting it just because you want to put your name on the side of a building? Or what do you bring to it? You now, all of a sudden, the way we approached it was, you know, we inherited 40 families. On day one, we now have 40 families to take care of besides ourselves. So we better have our stuff together because you're playing with 40 people's livelihood. So again, I think a clear plan of what you're going to do with that business, even, and here's the thing, I'm not a fan of a five-year plan because they change about every 2 or 3 years, but I think you still need to scratch some things on paper and to be able to convey that vision to your, not only the people that are close to you, but convey that vision to the people that are going to work with you every day. So a clear thought through plan from either side, depending upon what side you're going to be on, buying or selling.
How long have you been in this cycle now, beginning with when you were no longer an employee, became part of Big Three, all the way to Creative Blow Mode?
You're saying from when I was first an employee or when I was no longer an employee and owner?
Thank you. When you're no longer an employee, but changed to an owner. How long is this transition?
Yeah, it would have been October of 20. So okay. We're creeping up on 2 years.
So still fairly new, a lot of optimism. What's next for you generally, professionally and personally?
That's a really good question. Personally, I've got a senior at Lee Summit North, and she's going to go to Pitt State for school. That's the school her mother and I went to. And we're going to spend a lot of time with her there, and we're excited about that. So that's personally kind of one of the things that's very important to us. Professionally, again, it's important for Alan and I to take what we've learned through our years, and we both agree on this, to take this information that we've afforded to have and grow and learn and share it with anybody that's interested in it. You know, it's very similar to kind of some of the things that you're doing. How do you take all the knowledge that you gained over this period of time? And if you take it to your grave, shame on you.
Right.
So how do you share that with the rest of the world and make sure that they get that? Now, they may not use it or they may not even want it at that particular time. But if they've heard about it, they may use it not within a month or a year or 2 years, but maybe it'll be beneficial someday down the road. So I think that's probably one of the most important things, whether it's about buying a business, running a business, being a salesperson, being in manufacturing, whatever it might be. Here's some good practices that we've done. And again, take that and use it for however you need it.
You know, I have to thank you. My experience of you all along has been highly motivational. I get a lot of energy out of talking to you, dude.
I appreciate that.
And it's just always a joy to listen to you and where you're going. I am told I have a fair amount of energy. I need to somehow obtain your energy. I think I can go to a whole nother level.
I think you're doing quite well.
Well, what I take away from this, and maybe a commentary for the folks listening in, is that there's a critical part of making this jump is that you choose the right partner to help you down this road. Nobody does everything.
Sure, that's right.
So you've got to get a partner on board or people on board who are equally, if not more committed than you are, and that you have a plan that's put down, I assume, in writing, but as well, it's something that's probably stenciled to both of your brains at this point. So you know where you're going and what is to be achieved. And in doing that, all things are possible. Would that be a fair summary?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah.
So how do they find out about Todd Riley and about Creative Blow Mold? Could you give us contact information for you, the website, so that people can find out a little bit more about you and your company and what you're doing?
Sure. The website is creativeblowmold.com. And then at the same time, we have United Technical. So unitedtechnical.com is the defense and energy side of our business as well. Again, I'm on LinkedIn, as you know.
We
pass things back and forth there on a regular basis.
Yes.
Be glad to connect with anybody and answer any questions I could ever help with.
So I want to thank you again. Thanks, Todd. And thanks to the listeners. Be sure to learn more about Todd and his organizations. If there was one additional thought I would have for our listeners as you walk away with a plan and a partner about anything's possible.
Yeah.
And as Todd has shown you, live out your dreams.
Thank you.
And thanks to all our listeners. By the way, if you're in need or search of assistance in dealing with business succession planning or mergers and acquisitions, please feel free to call me at Spencer Fain. We are a Kansas City based firm, but we have 18 offices located throughout the country. You can also go to davesider.com and schedule a free consultation. And please subscribe to the show, rate it, leave me your comments on your favorite podcast platform such as Spotify or Apple Podcasts. Thank you all. We look forward to talking to you in the near future. Goodbye. Under the laws of the state of Missouri, I must also share with you this podcast is provided for educational purposes. It is not legal advice and is not intended to establish an attorney-client relationship. The recommendations contained in this podcast are not necessarily appropriate for every individual or business. In determining the best course of action, of course, business owners should consult with an attorney.